to the Eric Metaxas Show. Please keep your arms and legs inside the car at all times.
This is your final warning.
Now, here's your host, Mr. Thrill Ride himself, Eric Metaxas.
Hey, you crazy kids. Welcome to Hour 2. Albin and Chris, you know that today, Monday, often it's Miracle Monday, today is the day of the hotheads. We had Jeanine Pirro in Hour 1. Wow, what a hothead. And then we said, you know what? That's not enough. We're going to go to David Horowitz because we want another hothead. But we saved the best for last. The hottest head of all is coming up in this hour. His name, ladies and gentlemen, John the Situation's Mirak is going to be on shortly, right? What did I call him last week? I called him something else that when I heard myself say it, I actually laughed.
I know it was memorable,
I'll remember it. Okay. So we got some quick announcements, right? First of all, we launch today. Now listen carefully, folks. This is actually important. We launch today. We launch our Food for the Poor outreach for this month. So it's the whole month. You all know that we do this often throughout the year on this program. We want to give people an opportunity to give to something that is changing lives, that is important to an organization that we have vetted as excellent. Food for the Poor, you know, in the next segment, before we go to John Zmirak, we'll talk to the head of Food for the Poor, Angel Aloma, or Angel, I don't know. But we'll talk to him in the next segment to give us some details of what's going on. But we're doing it this month. But the reason I hope you're listening carefully right now is that you have an opportunity to do something before August 10th. So this is the whole month. We're going to have people giving the whole month. But for anybody who gives before August 10th, we've got a special deal for you, which I think you'll like. Let me talk about what Food for the Poor is. Pretty much every August, we've done it at other times of the year, but we talk about kids that are starving in places like Haiti and Guatemala. Very real, very real. We think about the problems we have. But Food for the Poor this year, you can imagine, has much more of a struggle feeding starving kids in third world countries because of the whole COVID thing. And I, according to my notes, I'm looking at notes here, it says that the normal supply chain of food has been cut off in some cases. So it's a lot harder. Informal markets, as they call it, are closed. Day laborers can't work. It's critical. Right. So we know it's always very serious, but this is critical. So I think we have a clip. I don't know. Can we play the clip from Angel Aloma to give people a taste of what I'm talking about? I don't know. James, do you have that clip?
But please understand that for $37, you can feed a starving child for 6 months. $37. Divide that by the days in 6 months, which is about 180 days. Think about it. $37 would mean a few cents a day. Please do it.
I just want to tell people, go to Food for the Poor, the banner at metaxastalk.com. Now remember, we've got John Zmirak coming up in a few minutes. And in hour one, we had Jeanine Pirro and David Horowitz. You don't want to miss that. But let me give you this information before I give you some more details. The information that you either go to metaxastalk.com and click on the banner, or you can call this number, 844-863-HOPE, 844-863-HOPE. But here is what we want to do, and Albin and Chris and I have worked this out. So listen carefully, folks. We know you don't give to get, but there are a lot of kids suffering, so we hope you'll give something. Anyone who gives anything is enrolled in our grand prize. This is just a fun thing. You can get your kids involved. They can give part of their allowance. Whatever you can give as a family, we want to enroll you in our grand prize contest. Now, Chris and Albin, we've been through this many times before. The grand prize is pretty much a ton of signed books, of my signed books, a ton of Albin's sign books, plus visit to the studio, and a bunch of swag. For example, you will notice, if you're watching, I'm holding a Mike Lindell bobblehead doll. You may get a signed bobblehead doll.
That's right.
You don't know what you'll get. You may get two signed bobblehead dolls. But the grand prize is always just a ton of fun, and you get a visit to the studio and all that stuff. So anybody who gives anything, because we always want everyone to participate. So if you're a fan of this program, you listen to this program, we just want you to participate. So whatever you give is going to go to Feed Hungry Kids. And you'll hear about that in the next segment, the details of what's going on in these countries. So anything gets you signed up for the grand prize. That's to get everybody to participate. If you give $100, Albin, do I have this right? That how many kids does that feed?
100 kids. Well, for $37, you can feed one child for 6 months for $37. So that's basically three children get fed for 6 months.
Okay. So for $100. Yeah. Okay. Think of this, folks. We'll be repeating this throughout the month, but think of this. $100 feeds three kids for a month in one of these places. So that shows you how far American dollars can go with food for the poor. Anybody who gives $100, you're feeding three kids for 6 months. You are also, well, you're going to get from us, obviously you get enrolled in the grand prize. We've already said that no matter what you give, but for $100, you get the Metaxas super code. And the Metaxas super code means you can listen to this program without any of the commercials or news breaks or any of that. You can buy that on your own, or you can give $100, obviously tax deductible, and feed three kids for 6 months, and you will get the Metaxas super code. And we'll do our best to get that to you ASAP.
Right.
$185, you get three Metaxas super codes. We want you to share this with friends. A lot of people, you tell your friends about the show. If you give them the Metaxas super code, you get three of those for $185. If you give them that, it's that much easier, and you get three enrollments for the grand prize. If you give $500, you get a signed copy of Donald and the Fake News, plus Metaxas Super. You get several Metaxas Supers. We'll do the math on that. But here's what I wanted to say today. I got a box. My book, Donald and the Fake News, does not come out. It's not published till August 25th, okay? I'm holding a copy of that book in my hand. I actually think it's the funniest, definitely the funniest of the three. There's no doubt. As much as I like them all, this is the funniest, Donald and the Fake News. I got a box of them, being the author, I got a box of them just the other day. Anybody who gives $500 to Food for the Poor before August 10th, are you listening? Before August 10th, $500, you will get a signed copy of this book mailed to you practically immediately. You will have this before it's published. I've never been able to do that with any of my books before, but I just want to say that as a challenge, that you will, you'll get that. There's a whole bunch more that we do, but if you give $500 before August 10th, you will get a signed copy of Donald and the Fake News mailed to you immediately. You will have it long before anybody else gets it. Just wanted to do that for you. This is an important cause. Angela Loma will tell us about it in the next segment, and then we'll talk to John Smirek about the news of the day and the week. But to remind you, you have to go to MetaxasTalk.com, or you can call if you like, 844-863-HOPE, 844-863-HOPE. We'll be reminding you of this throughout the month, but I just wanted to make sure that I said it ASAP. Anybody who gives $1,000 before the 10th of August, you will get an immediate pre-publication signed copy of Donald and the Fake News. I promise you, you'll enjoy it. We'll be right back with Angela Loma and then John Smirek. Hey, folks, I got something really special for you right now. My friend Angel Aloma, mi hermano Angel. How are you, my friend?
Muy bien, Eric. ¿Cómo estás tú?
We get to do great things together when there's terrible need. And right now, the reason I have you on is because there is a staggering need. We get to participate in God's purposes to do something about it. And obviously, right now, I'm inviting my audience to participate. It's kind of amazing what we're able to do in America with very little money. Now, I want you to tell us, first of all, we're doing a fundraiser for Food for the Poor. You're the executive director of Food for the Poor. What is going on? There's a particular emergency. There's a reason we're doing this right now, and I want my audience to tune in very carefully. So please tell us, what is this emergency right now?
Well, Eric, with the coronavirus as it is, and here in the United States, you have seen how it has created an upheaval here. I mean, coming from two developing nations myself, from Cuba and Jamaica, when I came to this country, I never thought I'd end up standing in line for toilet paper or being able to be only given one pack of meat per person when I went to. But those are just inconveniences. When this happens in developing nations, it becomes tragic. Because we thought at first when the coronavirus started that our countries would be asking us for PPEs, for masks and medicines and stuff like that. Every single country has begged us to send more food. And so we have pledged that we're going to send from 10 to 15 million more dollars worth of food to them because the need has gone from extreme hunger to starvation. And that's from very serious to tragic.
I was going to say, we have to be clear because these words can mean nothing. We have to be clear. You're talking about actual starvation.
And starvation that kills children and adults too, but children more so.
Listen, folks, sometimes we get very real. This is very real. Pennies that we have can change lives in places like Haiti right now. They need our pennies, 10 cents. Angel, I heard you talking to my friend Larry Elder. You tell us, break down what you are asking. By the way, people need to go to our website, which is metaxastalk.com. You'll see the details there, metaxastalk.com. But we need this as soon as possible. Tell my audience what their pennies will bring into this situation.
Well, 10 cents allows us to buy, ship, and distribute a meal, a rice and beans, which is basically the mix of carbs and and plant protein, which is what is considered actually a perfect meal for poverty in particular. So basically, not only to purchase it, but to ship it and to distribute it. It gets to the plate for that price.
One dime. I just want to make clear to my audience, do we understand the disparity between our wealth and what is happening in these countries? One thin dime can feed a child who is starving literally to death. This is no hyperbole, folks. So Angel, I think you said that we can feed a child for 6 months for $37. This is just
absolutely
unbelievable.
Two good meals a day for $37 for 6 months. And it's actually wonderful because at least we have we have an idea that child has 6 months in which maybe the country will change, in which we might be able to get more help to them, in which the jobs might open up. So there is hope in that. Now, there are people who might be able to afford to give $370 to give, you know, for 10 children. There are those who might only be able to give 37, and that's fine. It's whatever you can afford, even if it's a little bit sacrificial, because the situation here is tremendously urgent. We are talking about life and death in a manner that is not just something that we're thinking of symbolically. This is life and death physically for these. And every child's death brings sorrow and shame and depression to parents and grandparents. And we want to be able to save them of that also, because hunger is a physical aspect that is horrible of poverty. But for them to die of hunger brings so much shame. When we travel to Guatemala, the men usually run away when they see us coming to visit the home because they feel so embarrassed that they can't support their children. And that's something we don't think about, the shame that they feel, the lack of dreaming. They start to lose hope when this happens to generation after generation. And in a situation like COVID-19, they really feel, oh my God, why are we being punished like this? And one thing that is a hope to them, and I saw it alive in Haiti after the earthquake, is that they have this strong feeling that regardless of their problems, God will send someone to them. God will touch someone's heart that will help them. And that's what we're asking of your listeners, to allow God to touch their hearts, to really bring them, you know, to the generosity needed to save someone's life.
I always say that doing a good deed like this is spiritual warfare. If you want to shake hell, you do something like this, whether it's sacrificial or almost sacrificial. I mean, to be able to give money to people who will never be able to pay you back, knowing that God sees what you do. This is a gift that you're giving us, okay, in America, because we say, what can I do? What can I do? They tell the story about the two boys where one was eating and the other was just watching. I mean, this brings it home. I can't even believe this.
In Haiti, I went into a hut and there was a little four-year-old eating a little bowl of rice. And then his seven-year-old brother was standing there looking at him, looking tremendously sad. So I asked him, "Pour qui sel pas manger?" Which means, how come you're not eating? And he said to me in Creole, "Today, it's not my turn to eat." And it broke my heart. I thought of my grandchildren immediately, and I thought how painful it would be for me as a grandfather or as a parent when my kids were young, if they were really hungry and they came to me and I said, "I can't feed you today, maybe tomorrow." You know, that child was suffering, but the mother and father had to be suffering even more emotionally.
I want to make this personal. My mother in Germany right after the war, they went hungry many times. And my mother told me this story many times of coming home from school and finding my grandmother weeping at the table because she had no food to give her children for dinner. This is real. Folks, it might not be happening in America, but I'm telling you, this is real. What is happening in Haiti right now, it is so much worse than we can imagine, that if we don't step up, you kind of have to wonder. God blesses us to be a blessing. If you have a little bit of money, the Lord's given it to you to use it for his purposes. We know that when we're working with Food for the Poor, they are using this for God's purposes. I mean, you're telling me that COVID has been devastating also. Tell us about the white flags. I couldn't believe that one.
Well, it's not even flags, because it gives you the idea of something on a stick and, you know, flying in the air. It is T-shirts or any piece of old cloth that they have at home. In El Salvador, they use the white ones and they put it out there because I guess everyone had a white old T-shirt, and they hung it up outside. It was to indicate to passersby and to agencies that there had children who were starving. This situation has become so huge, so out of hand, that you know, we need every possible help. My one consolation is that the American public has proven themselves over and over again. Once they hear of a situation like this, they always respond. This is not our first rodeo here between you and I, Eric, and you know that your listeners respond beautifully to something like this. You know that the American public, whether it's abroad or here, as long as they hear about it, as long as they know it's happening, they respond beautifully. I have lived in four countries, and none have the philanthropic tradition of this country.
It's part of the culture of America. It comes from the Christian heritage of America, that we understand this in our bones. And the question is, who can hear what you've just been talking about and say, "I don't have $37 to give to this situation"? I mean, as bad as it is, whenever we do a fundraiser for Food for the Poor, we are now talking about COVID disaster, factories shut down, people with no jobs. As bad as it ever was, it's now that much worse. And I want to beg my audience, folks, focus on what we're talking about. This is a very, very dramatic situation. We can't do better than go to Food for the Poor. The idea that you can take 6 cents and get a meal, and for 4 cents, get it to the people, I mean, that alone speaks for the tremendous efficiency We're basically out of time. Angel, I just want to say to you, I'm grateful you all exist, because without you, I don't know what I would do. There are people out there that can give thousands of dollars. I'm asking my audience, folks, please go to MetaxasTalk.com. Do what you can for God's glory. Angel, thank you very much.
Thank you, Eric. And we're grateful for you, too. It was nice talking to you. God bless.
Always.
I will sing a lullaby.
Hey there, folks. Welcome back. Welcome back. Guess what? We've saved the hottest head for last, John Zmirek. John, what's on your mind?
Well, Eric, I remember you quipped on Twitter about a week ago. You were joking about this racial obsession people have, where they're putting everything through the meat grinder of race. And I think you were sort of taunting people, which is something I respect, when you said, "Well, how could all white people be bad? Because Jesus was white and he was sinless." I'm so confused. And
well, before you say anything, I just have to clarify,
sure, yeah,
Twitter
yeah.
is so dangerous. If you quip or you say something provocative or you're trying to get people to think, your enemies, the mob, I guess, will flat-footedly report otherwise. So it was reported in many articles, that Eric Metaxas declared that Jesus was white. I have to tell you, I've never been through anything like it. It's humiliating and fatiguing. But anyway, if it prompted a thought in John Zmirek, I guess I've done something positive. So what do you have in mind?
Well, I've got a new piece at Stream.org, and the headline is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez cancels Jesus for his white savior complex. And it has some provocative quotes from the congressman. You remember that last week she condemned the state of Hawaii for having at the U.S. Capitol representing it, you know, every state has two statues, for having St. Damien of Molokai, who, you know, was a Belgian priest who read about the abandoned lepers in Hawaii back when it was still an independent country, and came all the way to Hawaii to take care of the lepers. And
well, some of the lepers that he cared for were not lepers of color. And of course, that's enough to get you canceled.
Well, in fact, you know, they were all native Hawaiian lepers, and he cared for them, and he caught leprosy himself and died. She referred to the fact that Hawaii had a statue of a white man, this white man in the Capitol, as evidence of white supremacism. No kidding.
I'm shaking my head, John, because we are living in times, it's too crazy to believe, but if you go to stream.org, you can read John's article. Please continue.
So in the same week, the National Catholic Reporter, which is a far left, very well-funded magazine that believing Catholics would call it the fish wrap, it did a story saying that she is the future of the Catholic Church. So I've got a piece at stream.org where I carry her critique further. It's a satire, okay? She hasn't said any of these things yet, but I predict that she will. Here are some of the quotes from my little satire.
From Saint Alexandria of yeah. Cortez, yeah.
As a lifelong devoted Catholic, a Latinx person with a cervix, and a New Yorker, I would like to know why our, like, whole religion is centered on someone who seemed to consider himself a white savior. Cortez told a meeting of U.S. Catholic bishops Saturday evening. some of the other quotes include, I know that Sean King and some other theologians whom I respect are questing for a Jesus of culture, she told the attending bishops. And I honor that, but it doesn't ring true to me. I mean, Jesus was a Jew, am I right? She paused. Well, maybe I watched too much television as a kid, but I've seen Mel Brooks, Woody Allen, Jerry Seinfeld, Fran Drescher, and Larry David. They look pretty damn white to me. Same skin color, same privilege. Maybe even more privilege, she said.
That actually, you know what, to get half serious for a minute, because that's as serious as I can get with you. That was my confusion when I said Jesus was white. You know, I was playing with the idea of race and whether we, you know, in other words, the whole thing becomes so ridiculous. It's the savior of mankind. It's God incarnate, but he was Jewish. So I wouldn't declare him not to be white any more than I would declare him to be white. You know, he comes from that part of the world where it's sort of the meeting of every continent. But what amazes me is that Jews today are considered white. And the blowback that I got from this, it was curious. It's almost like they've remade Jesus as a Palestinian, basically.
Well, that's what they like to say. Jesus Christ was a Palestinian of color murdered by a right-wing fascist government because they're pulling it out of their bodily orifice. They don't believe in Jesus. They don't believe in Christianity. They don't believe in God. They're Darwinian nihilists. But when it's convenient and they can make a little Yasser Arafat sock puppet out of Jesus Christ, they'll do it just to mess with us.
Well, that's I guess it boils down to that. It can be depressing, but we're supposed to pray for our enemies. And I realized I tweeted something the other day about the Antifa BLM gang that burned Bibles in Portland, right? And then they burned an American flag. And I thought to myself, just think of the irony. When Jesus said, "Forgive them, Father, they know not what they do," the Bible and the American flag, it's the Christian faith and the United States of America that have done more to advance human freedom and human dignity than anything in history. So it's like they're cutting off their own hands. It's just so bizarre. And I think we have to realize, as much as we have to do what we can to stop these people, we have to understand that they are, in most cases, very broken people. So we have to be firm, but at the same time, if we're part of the church, we need to pray for them, because some of them will find God. Some of them, by his grace, will find him. We're going to go to break. More with John Smirak.
Hey, Albin.
Yeah.
I want to talk about ReliefFactor.com.
Oh, yeah.
ReliefFactor.com. This is how you know that I believe it works.
Okay.
I will not stop bugging all my relatives and friends, right? Mm-hmm. I think I said the other day, I could almost wring their necks, but that would give them pain, so I don't do that. But they have all kinds of pain, and I say to them, I promise you, at least try Relief Factor.
Yeah.
But my relatives sometimes don't listen to me because they know me so well. But to those people listening right now, you don't know me that well, please take my word for it. ReliefFactor.com. It works. It works. It works. It works. It's just, if you take the Quick Start pack, for example, okay, it's only $19.99, right? You take it for 3 weeks and you'll know whether it works. That's what I say to people. At least take it for 3 weeks. It costs almost nothing. And by the way, if it does work, it'll change your life.
Yeah.
Okay. I went off it for a while, and believe me, my pain came back. So I'm telling you, ReliefFactor.com. It is natural. ReliefFactor.com. Check it out.
Folks, I'm talking to John Smirak. And John, do you want to talk about the racist hoax? I put on Twitter, or maybe it was Facebook, I said that it's the Chinese, you know, in the Chinese zodiac, it's the year of the racist hoax. And I forgot about that. Kind of explains that we've had like once per month, we've had a racist hoax. Everyone is Jussie Smollett. I don't know what's happening.
What's the latest one, Erica? Maybe I missed it.
The latest one, you know what? I forgot the details. It was a student at a university who put racist notes on his own car.
You know, well, I mean, to, you know, to that's prove that's
that,
not,
the community at the university was racist and it was discovered to be a hoax.
That's not a hoax, Eric. That's a tragedy. That's an example of someone internalizing racism to such a degree that he performs it. That we can't mock that person. Right. Jussie Smollett didn't deserve to be prosecuted. He deserves our understanding. He deserves maybe to be Joe Biden's vice presidential pick.
Actually, since it's Monday, who do you think Joe Biden is going to pick? Since we're just riffing on the carnage that is Western civilization, who do you think?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm afraid of, okay? Yeah. My fear is that he would be smart and do whatever it took to get Michelle Obama on the ticket. Because so many Americans are still zombies on the subject of the Obamas. They look back to, I remember when Obama was president, there wasn't riots in the streets and there weren't burning things in the streets and everybody seemed happy. And they told us racism was over. We were a post-racial America. That was our reward for electing the Obamas. If we get Michelle on there, everything will be fine. It'll be like the age of Oprah. That's my fear, is that she would.
You know what? That's Albin has said the same thing many times, and I always poo-poo it, not because either of you are wrong, but because I heard Michelle Obama many months ago very plausibly say that she was not interested. In other words,
I've heard that too.
As plausible. Whereas when somebody like Hillary Clinton says she's not running or whatever, I can't believe, every word she utters is a lie, including the and. So I have to say that when Michelle Obama said that, I thought, I do think that she's disgusted by politics and just doesn't want to be part of that world anymore. But listen, I could be wrong.
That would be my fear. Because if that happens, then there's only one thing Trump could do, which would be to promise Mike Pence the Supreme Court seat and put somebody really exciting on the ticket with them. Who's the governor of South Dakota? No, what's her, Noemi?
Yeah,
someone exciting on the ticket. It's gonna be gimmick time then. I mean, already American politics has become like an episode of Howdy Doody. And so what the heck? We're all throwing poop at the wall to see what sticks. I can't believe we live in this country, Eric. I'm so glad I'm 56 and not 36. I'm thinking of taking up like zip lining and tightrope walking and parasailing. Because at this point, I really don't care if I see the next 30 or 40 years. I'm not looking forward to it. A lot of those years might be spent in a prison camp, Eric.
Let me remind you, Mr. Christian, let me remind you that God has called us to be alive at this hour for his purposes. And all of us should rejoice in him and do what he calls us to do, knowing that anything else is of the devil. So I know what you mean, but, you know, what can we do? Here we are for such a time as this, my friend. John, you did a follow-up article, didn't you, when you were on Tucker Carlson recently?
Oh, yeah.
You talked about Nick Sandman. And did you write an article following up at stream.org?
I did something on Herman Cain. It's called The Unpersoning of Herman Cain. Herman Cain was a brilliant businessman, a political leader, a good man. He got trashed and people say slandered when he ran for president. He ran into the destruction machine of rival campaigns and he got accusations that didn't end up being proven at all about his personal life. And he was just a good, kind, courageous man. Nobody had an unkind word to say about Herman Cain. He turned the Godfather Pizza Company around and made it a success. Created thousands of jobs for people of every color. He died recently. He had stage 4 colon cancer. So nobody knows how long he would have lived because he was kind of at the end of his journey.
Now, hold on a second. He had stage 4 colon cancer?
Yeah. And
then why is everybody reporting that he died of COVID like that's the only thing that he was suffering with?
Well, because they're liars. And
wait a minute. Nobody in the conservative news mentioned that he had stage 4 colon cancer.
Well, he did. And so he was at extremely high risk for COVID.
But John, I am like, this always happens. Like, you tell me something, I cannot believe that nobody mentioned this, that I have to be talking to you on my own show to find out that Herman Cain had advanced colon cancer.
You know where I found that out?
Where?
On a website called HermanCain.com, run by his family and friends and staff, where they reported it. It wasn't
but
hard
Sean
to find.
Hannity and all these others, nobody would mention that they would allow this to play into the COVID narrative. I can't believe it.
Well, let me continue with my point.
This is a headline, my friend.
Chris Cuomo gets on TV and gloats. Herman Cain supported Donald Trump. He didn't wear a mask. He had COVID. He got COVID probably from a Trump rally, and now he's dead. What do we learn from this? And I was just flabbergasted. Herman Cain had stage 4 cancer. Both my parents died of cancer. It is a slow, nasty, lingering death. If Herman Cain decided to take a few risks, given that he had stage 4 cancer, he wanted to go out doing what he loved, which was standing up for America, doing politics, trying to protect our country against the lunatics who are using race to divide us against each other and destroy the country that you and I and Herman Cain love. So he went to some campaign rallies. He may or may not have caught COVID at the campaign rallies. If he did, it spared him months of likely agony. Chris Cuomo is on TV gloating about it.
Meanwhile, all right, you wrote an article at The Stream, okay, about this. We're going to go on a break here. Can I keep you on for a couple more minutes real quick? Okay, yeah. We'll be right back with John Zmierak. You can go your own way.
Tried to make it Sunday, but I got so damn depressed that I set my sights on Monday.
Folks, I'm talking to John Zmierak. We had Jeanine Pirro. Then we had David Horowitz, but we saved the hottest head of all for last. John Zmierak, you just told me something. I'm shocked. You said that Herman Cain had stage 4 colon cancer.
Right.
So when it's reported that he died of COVID, how is it conceivable that all of the conservative media did not push back on this?
Let's do the pushing back now. All right. So he had stage 4 colon cancer, which meant A, he was at very high risk of dying if he caught colon cancer, and B, maybe he didn't want to add 2 or 3 years of fighting off extremely painful colon cancer. Maybe he thought, hey, you know what? It's worth the risk. And if I go, I'll go quickly. And Eric, I watched both my parents die slowly and horribly of cancer. And I'm telling you, if I get diagnosed with advanced cancer, I'm going to be licking doorknobs. I'm going to be walking tightropes, as I was saying before. So Chris Cuomo's on TV, basically tap dancing on a black man's coffin. A man who died of cancer that was sped up a little bit by COVID, which he may or may not have caught at a campaign rally, doing what he loved, which was politics and leadership. Chris Cuomo mocking him for dying. Meanwhile, Chris Cuomo defended his brother, Andrew Cuomo, for dumping COVID patients at nursing homes, killing. No one disputes this, killing tens of thousands of New Yorkers. Do you know the difference, Eric, between Herman Cain getting COVID and dying and those nursing home patients? He had a choice. He made a decision as a free American to take certain risks with his life, which was already blighted by severe cancer. And he made those choices. They were patriotic choices. He had the consequences. God rest his soul. I hope he's with God now. Chris Cuomo resents that. He doesn't think you and I should get to make choices like that. It's for people like him and his brother to make the choices. They'll decide whether you risk COVID. They'll decide whether you're too old enough and it's time for you to die. You don't get to make those decisions. The elites, the white, rich media elites, we get to make those decisions. So no, you don't get to go to church in New York, but I might decide that you and everyone else in your nursing home, it's time for you to die, so you're going to get COVID. Deal with it. You have no choice. You're locked in a nursing home. I am so outraged by the Cuomo brothers. They exemplify everything that is evil and despicable in American life. Those people should be languishing in a rural area, hiding from all the people who hate them for murdering their elderly relatives, instead of gadding about on television and pretending that they're leaders.
We're living in crazy times. Everybody listening to this program knows that. These are crazy times. I thank God for you, John, and for those who are helping us make sense of what is happening. I've never felt so free to exhort people to put their trust in God. The God of the Bible is real. If you want more details on that, I've written some books, but I just want to say that apart from God, it's very difficult to figure out how to move through the strange times in which we're living. I want to exhort people also, folks, please go to our website, metaxastalk.com. Food for the Poor needs your help. Everything will be listed there for you. Please go there. Check it out. John Smirek, thank you, my friend. God bless you.
Thank you, Eric. God bless.